It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Most women who are in prison wound up there because of a series of bad decisions. At the Iowa Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville, there are many programs designed to help incarcerated women learn the skills they'll need to lead a successful life and avoid going back to prison when their sentences are done. This hour, we're going to focus on a class designed to teach women behind bars how to have healthy relationships. And with me this hour is Rachel Williams. She's an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa. Hello, Rachel.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And along with Rachel are three of her students who have worked with her in various capacities in this program. KT Hawbaker is an intern with the department. Hello, KT.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Heidi Kukta and Elise Burnside are also here. Hello, Heidi.
Hello.
And hello, Elise.
Hi.
Thank you all so much for coming today. And Rachel, I want to go back to the genesis of this program. Where did this idea come from?
Well, actually, it was really inspired by an amazing undergraduate that I had the experience of working with years and years ago. Her name was Rebecca McCray, and she stalked me. So I would see her and she would say, "Hi, Professor Williams, you know, I really want to go out to the prison with you." And I was not in the habit of bringing undergraduates out there. And really, I had taken a few graduate students, but I was always really afraid of, you know, having this be a voyeuristic experience. And I've worked there now almost 14 years, and I really love the women that are there. And I just never wanted the women to feel as though they were on display. And so, you know, Rebecca asked me numerous times, and finally she wore me down. And I said, "Well, okay, why don't you come with me?" So we rode in the car, and it's almost 2 hours to get there. And by the time we got there, I was just really in love with this person. I mean, she was so brilliant and so amazing. And we got there, and I was working on this program that had to do with creative writing and reading women's autobiographies. And she just blew me away. She was unbelievable. She was an incredible facilitator. And by the end of the night, I said, "You know, we got to be partners. We need to do this together." And so she worked out there with me for a couple of years. And she worked at the ACLU and blogged about women in prison. And she's just finishing up a Fulbright where she studied a prison in Eastern Europe. And so she's just an amazing person. But after that, I thought, well, you know, I'm sure Rebecca is not the only undergraduate. And I love my students. I've always had phenomenal students who might enjoy this kind of experience. And so right at that time, all these things kind of happened for me. So I was trained by DVIP. I also took training through RVAP to become a rape victim advocate volunteer. And then also the Gender, Women's, and Sexuality Studies Department asked me to take over their practicum course. And I said, "Well, I'd really love to do this. Here's my dream. I'd love to take women's studies students into the prison." And Jennifer Glass at this point in time was the DEO, and she said, "That would be amazing." And honestly, it felt like the sky opened up and, you know, the sun shined down on the top of my head. It was just like, this is a dream come true. I cannot believe this is going to be my life. And so that summer, I went up to Temple University and took a course with Lori Pompa, who runs a program called the Inside Out Program, where she brings students from Temple University inside and works with students who are incarcerated. And they basically have a class where they talk about what is prison for. And I really liked that idea, and I learned a lot from that. And so I thought our first, you know, opportunity would be, you know, and I never want to go into any community place and say, this is what we're going to do. You know, I think it always needs to begin with a conversation with the stakeholders where you say, what are your needs? You know, what do you really need? And so the first year I had, and every year I've had this amazing group of students, you know, I always think, oh, I'll never have a group of students as great as these. Then again, every single year I have another group of students who I love. So my inside students were women in the prison. And I, like I said, I've known women there for many, many years. And so I had a pretty good group of women who I trusted, who I knew would be, you know, great with my students and who I knew my students would enjoy getting to know. And so I brought about, I think it was maybe 14 students in, and I had 14 or 15 women who were incarcerated. And we created a think tank, and we spent pretty much a year working through what are the issues, you know, here at Mitchellville. And so my outside students, my university students, you know, would do research, and they would go to the library and find articles, and we'd talk about things. And then we'd sort of ask the women on the inside, is this true? Is this not true? What do your friends think? And so they sort of did the field research for us. And we came up with four issues that were really important: motherhood, substance abuse, health, and relationships. And at the end of that year, we held a prison-wide conference inside the prison, and we invited any woman who wanted to come and learn about these issues. And we did these panels where we had students who had done research. We had women who had been part of the think tank, who had really compelling stories and who had also read the research. We had experts, so I had a number of faculty from the university come in, and we created these panels. And women, you know, I don't know how many women came that day. We probably had 100, 150 women from the prison come, and that was really all we could accommodate. And it was very popular. And we just had some very frank conversations about these four topics. And out of that came, you know, when the prison said, we're open, we're totally open to this, which they've always been really accepting of any of my crazy ideas, which, you know, I bless their hearts because so, you know, they said, we'd have no money. And that, you know, that's one of the problems. The Department of Corrections never has enough money. And so they said, you know, what are some solutions to these issues? And so the health issue that came up was really around health care. And so Dr. Nicole Nisley had come out as one of our experts and was just very moved by what she experienced. And so since that time, she's been working closely with the DOC and especially with the women at Mitchellville to sort of create some different programs that are related to healthcare. And so I really feel great about that. Substance abuse, you know, that's really out of the scope of my practice. And there's a number of programs that are there to work with that, but it is a huge issue.
Right. And it is a very big part of what they do because they have so many women who come into the prison who are addicted to a substance.
Absolutely. And, you know, it makes sense when you think about their histories. Motherhood is also difficult, and there's some programs there. One of them was started by a former faculty at the University of Iowa, Mickey Eliason, and she started this program called FIT, Families in Transition. And motherhood's a really dicey subject. It's very difficult. We can talk about that a little bit later. And then healthy relationships. And the prison said, you know, I had this great conversation with Warden Wachtendorf and the associate warden, Robin Bagby and Paul Rohde. And they said, okay, so women have relationships here. They're not supposed to, but they do. And that often results in violence. It can result in a lot of conflict. And so, you know, when they come in and they've had really rough relationships, you know, filled with domestic violence and sexual assault. And we really want to talk about how can we make this better? Because it's really an issue of public safety within the prison and outside of the prison. And so what, you know, what could you do? And I said, well, you know, we could facilitate a curriculum. You know, we never want to use the word teach because, I mean, who am I to teach someone how to have a relationship? And I think, you know, the idea of bringing in these amazing college women, but, you know, a lot of the women with whom we work are in their 40s and 50s. And I know at this point in my life, if I had a 20-year-old tell me this is how you need to have a healthy relationship, I might laugh them out the door. No offense, but let's be honest. So we also worked, the next group of students I had, we worked with the women and we sort of came up with this curriculum and we basically field tested it. And, you know, we got a lot of good feedback. Everyone really enjoyed it. And that group of students, they were dancers, they were theater people, they were artists, they were historians, they were anthropologists, they were people in social work. And that's always the case. So my students always come from a variety of backgrounds. And so that first year we field tested it, and then every single year we keep working on it, and it gets better and better. And so we always take suggestions and say what worked, what didn't. And, you know, it's different every single time, so it's very fluid. So that's where we are now.
So you said that the warden said to you, well, women have relationships in here. They're not supposed to, but they do. So I'm curious about your definition of relationship, because mm-hmm. I think that when people hear that, they immediately jump to romantic or sexual
right.
relationships.
I think orange is the new black, right?
Right, exactly. But your curriculum doesn't just cover romantic relationships.
Right.
The curriculum also covers family relationships and friendships.
Right.
Which are things where I'm guessing that a lot of skill building is necessary.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, not all of the relationships the women in prison have are negative. I mean, many of them, for the first time in their life, they come in and they find a friend who's a woman and they find someone they can trust. Someone that doesn't judge them. And they, you know, for many of them, they have some really close friends and it's a very healthy thing. It's just that every once in a while, you know, you do have women who, you know, become intimate with each other and not necessarily sexually. I mean, intimacy is a huge, idea, but you know, I always explain to people, imagine living in a dorm. You never, ever leave the dorm. And the people you're in the dorm with are the people that you live with for the rest of your life, you know, or an apartment building or just your neighborhood. You can't ever leave that. And so drama happens. You know, people get jealous. They get upset. Things happen. And if you come in with a very sort of poor set of skills. If you've grown up in an abusive family, if you've only known abusive intimate partnerships, if you've never been friends with women, you know, and you don't know how to be friends, it can be very difficult, you know, to have a healthy relationship. And on top of it, living in prison is extremely stressful. So there's all these outside factors that, you know, really make things hard sometimes.
Well, let's talk about what it's like when you first arrive at the beginning of each session, because this is a 9-week course. Mm-hmm. And so do women volunteer to be a part of it? Are they asked to be a part of it? How does that work?
Well, for some women, it's part of their treatment program. So the prison has been really happy with what's come out of that. And we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from participants. And so some women are, you know, they have to be there. Other women want to be there. You know, the other thing about the women in prison is they're incredibly curious. They are intellectually starving, some of them, and they want to take classes. They want to figure out how to make their lives better. And so they, you know, there's always, every time I go and I do a number of programs out there, women always stop me in the yard and say, when are you going to offer that class again? So it's a mix. It's a real mix.
All right. And we're getting close to a break, so I don't want to open up this can of worms. But I'm very curious from the three students who are here to talk about what it's like as a 20-something or an upper teen, I guess, in some cases, to walk into this prison environment to meet with these women and what their impressions are of you on that first day. So we'll get to that in just a moment. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back to continue this conversation. With me this hour is Rachel Williams. She's an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa. Also, she brought along with her three of the students who have worked with her, Katie Hawbaker, Heidi Kukta, and Elise Burnside. And we'll talk about what this experience has been like. We're focusing on a course that happens twice a year, a 9-week course, or once a year, a 9-week course in the Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville to help women there develop healthier relationship skills. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a program provided at the Iowa Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville, a healthy relationships course. And it's taught by Rachel Williams, who's an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa, and also facilitated by many of her students. So University of Iowa students also go to the prison and participate in this course. And three of those students are also with us today, Katie Hawbaker, Heidi Kukta, and Elise Burnside. And I would love to get an impression from the three of you about what it was like to enter the prison the first day, because it can be a bit of a culture shock. I'm sure that Rachel did her best to prepare you for what you'd find. Also, as you mentioned, Rachel, the idea of having undergraduate students facilitating a course on healthy relationships might seem difficult for some people who are not in their 20s to swallow. So I'm curious about the kind of welcome and your first impressions when you went to the prison for the first time. And Heidi, why don't you start?
Well, my first impressions were that it was funny to me how similar the women's prison felt to being in high school, just sort of the insular nature of, you know, they have this culture and they all know each other and, you know, the constant talking and laughing and, you know, some drama. It felt to me very like being in high school, not because the women are immature, but just because it's just that kind of feeling. And I didn't expect it to feel like that. I expected it to feel really like impersonal and sort of intimidating.
Did it make you feel like the new kid at school?
Kind of, yeah. But I was shocked by just how gracious and open, you know, the women there were to us as, you know, young 20-somethings just coming to, you know, share some curriculum about healthy relationships. They were just so, you know, they took it as it came, and it became less about, I thought the differences between us as university students and them as inmates at a correctional facility would be really central and paramount to that interaction. But actually, as the the weeks went on, we just kept discovering how much we all had in common, just as women, and with the common struggles all women have, you know, figuring out themselves and figuring out, you know, how to relate to other people. So it was exciting.
KT, what were your impressions?
So I was also in Heidi's batch of students back in like the fall of 2012. I definitely felt like, okay, I'm 21 years old. I'm going into a prison and I'm going to tell women how to have healthy relationships. Well, in the meantime, I am very much 21 and feeling it. So I'm like, what could they possibly learn from me? I felt intimidated. And in the meantime, my parents are like, what are you doing? So I went in and I was really nervous. Everything's kind of in lockdown mode. I was like, okay, I'm ready for this. And then I go in, I start engaging these conversations with the women in my group, and I immediately am just like attached. I want to be their friends. I want to bond. I just want to talk with them. They're so interesting. And they start off by giving me dating advice, you know, because it's a Friday night and I'm going back to Iowa City. And they're like, well, you need to make sure you're not doing this and you know, all this kind of stuff. So it was really great. I immediately felt very welcomed by them, and I ended up forging some very solid friendships with them, and I'm totally appreciative of the experience. So yeah, it was great. I was, you know, nervous, but then I warmed up. It was great. I'm so happy I got to go do that.
How about you, Elise?
Yeah, actually it's funny, I was gonna say that it felt a lot like a high school too, and when I was inside I would see the razor wire fence, and I would be reminded that I wasn't in a school, and that was interesting. But as far as meeting the women, they were so respectful and nice to us at all times, and they were so willing to be honest. They shared a lot of really personal stories, and it made me feel instantly close to them, and I trusted them a lot, and it was a great experience, you know, for me. Just as much as them, if not more for me than them.
Last summer on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we did a series on correctional institutions in the state of Iowa. And so I visited Mitchellville and I talked to a number of different inmates, and several of them told me that they know themselves, they understand themselves so much better now than they did before they went to prison. And one of them sort of made a joke about, well, you've got a lot of time to think. Yeah. So, but Rachel, I mean, a large part of this curriculum is designed to help inmates be introspective and really think about their lives and themselves.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really true. And it's, you know, it's, I'm glad to hear all three of you talk about how you also thought about things. One of the rules, I guess, that I have is that we all do the homework. So, you know, I would never ask my students to do something that I would not be comfortable myself doing. And so I think it's not only transformative for the women who are part of the class, but I think it's also transformative for facilitators. You know, I've had a number of young women say, you know, I hadn't really examined the relationship I was in until, you know, this class, and I had to answer these questions or write this poem, and it really made me think about, you know, some issues. I think one of the things that you just said that is very true is that, you know, prison can be very transformative. I mean, for many of these women, it's the first time they've been safe in a way. It's the first time they've known where their next meal is coming from, you know, that they've gotten medical care that they really needed, you know, and it's not to say that they're getting the best of everything. I mean, people have this really skewed opinion that prison is a lovely place to be, and it isn't. No, it really isn't. As much as the administration at ICIW tries to make it a place that's healthy, it's hard. So, yeah, I think it can be a very transformative experience. And, our curriculum was created specifically for women and for women who are incarcerated. And we tried to pull some off the shelf, and they were all, you know, they seemed really light and fluffy, and they seemed to be very heteronormative, and they seemed to be, you know, really aimed at almost like high school girls. And so, you know, we really had to start from scratch and think about what are some real serious issues? How does oppression play into this? How does privilege play into this? How does race play into this? You know, how do relationships that women have with other women play into this? And that was something that was really hard to find in any curriculum. You know, all of those curriculum models that I looked at always assume that you were a woman and you had a relationship with a man. And so when you go into an all-women's prison, that's just not going to work,
right?
Necessarily.
Right. So in looking at your curriculum, I was kind of surprised by where you start, because as you mentioned, I mean, you start with talking about race and gender and cultural stereotypes and a lot of the things in our environment that we allow to define us. So I'm curious about how those conversations go. Is that something that a lot of the women have already thought about? Does anybody want to weigh in on that?
I'll start and then I'm going to turn it over to my students. One of the reasons we start there is because the purpose of the class through the university is to have students really take theory that they've read and see how it happens in practice. So see how that theory applies to real world living. And the prison is kind of an amazing place because you have women from all walks of life, all ages, all races, all educational backgrounds. You know, I know women there that have graduate degrees. So, you know, it's a hodgepodge of different kinds of people. So those are difficult conversations, though. That's been one of the hardest things we've had to talk about. And, you know, race in the prison is very different when you talk about race in the prison versus race here. I mean, and actually Iowa is has like basically the worst record for disproportionate minority contact in the United States. So in terms of our population ratio, we lock up more people of color than any other state when you look at our, you know, population as a whole. So those are hard conversations. Do you all want to talk about that a little bit, Heidi?
I think that conversations of race were the women were a little bit hesitant to talk about that at first. And I don't know if it was just because they didn't want to talk about race, you know, having to live with a bunch of other women, but they didn't seem to feel that they were oppressed based on their race until we actually started talking about systemic oppression and, you know, how people are at all different levels of privilege. And once we looked at a diagram called the axis of privilege, and we talked about, you know, the different dichotomies like people of color and then, you know, white people and the different axes that exist. And then the women started understanding, you know, what kind of oppression they fell under. And that was an interesting conversation to have.
Heidi, did you have something to add?
Yeah. Conversations we had surrounding sexual orientation were really interesting. Just sort of revealed all the different ideas people have about what the origins of sexual orientation are. You know, it's a huge culture is just, you know, this idea of, you know, there's women who are really straight, and then there's women who are really gay, and then there's women who are just gay for the stay, you know, and it's not like this huge widespread part of prison culture, but it's something everyone, you know, thinks about and knows about and has really strong opinions about. So sort of trying to sort of rein in those really strong opinions and trying to create an atmosphere that feels safe for everyone could be challenging at times. But I think in the end, everyone in the room learned something that, you know, we're all women and we all have these similar experiences and it's okay. So that felt good.
We're talking about a program designed to help women who are incarcerated at the Iowa Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville learn healthy relationship skills. With me this hour is Rachel Williams. She's an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa. And three of her students, Heidi Kukta, Elise Burnside, and KT Hawbaker. You're welcome to join our conversation as well this hour. Did you participate in this program? You can let us know about that, or do you have any other stories to share? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Rachel, in talking about how cultural stereotypes and discrimination and oppression might play into each of these women's individual stories, one of the purposes of prison, and I talked to Warden Wackendorf about this when I was there, of course, is to help these women learn to take responsibility for what they did. And I can imagine somebody listening to our conversation today thinking, well, wait a minute, are you giving them somebody to blame for the situation that they're in? Is that a concern for you when writing this curriculum?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that people have this somewhat of a misunderstanding. So, you know, I've been working in prisons for over two decades, and I would say that, you know, I've worked with women who've done all kinds of things, and I never really want to know what they've done. But sometimes it just comes out, you know, they tell me, or you know about who they are because of the sensationalism of their case. But I would say I don't think I've ever really met a woman who doesn't regret what happened. And I think that it's a really complicated picture when you talk about how women end up in prison. I mean, they are more than happy to take responsibility for what they do. You know, and there's a lot of classes there that talk about victim impact, you know, and they have a really clear understanding of why they're there. I mean, and we know there are no victimless crimes. But I think the other thing to take into account is that, you know, many of these women come from impoverished backgrounds. There isn't a real easy pathway to legitimate employment with a living wage. And so, you know, when you see, for example, that if I deal drugs, I can make a whole lot more money than I can if I go and, you know, do hair or flip burgers or whatever. And it's very, you know, it's much easier to do that in some instances. And it really is one of the only ways to actually support a family. You know, a number of the women also are in prison because of their relationship with a person that, you know, co-opted them to do something. And so especially and when you mix that in with abuse, so domestic violence is a huge problem. And, you know, just the resources to deal with domestic violence seem to be shrinking as we are encountering that even now in our state environment. But so if you're a woman and you're in a relationship with a man and you've been in a relationship with this man since you were a teenager and you're afraid of leaving that relationship, and this man says to you, we're going to do this and you're going to do this with me, or you might lose your children. I will, you know, they make threats. And so, you know, there's been a number of women who I know who have been in situations where they really honestly didn't have a choice. You know, all the choices they had were poor. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, they should just leave that relationship. And I want to say to them, it's not that easy. You know, if you're in a relationship where domestic violence is an issue, for some women, it can take almost 30 times to practice leaving before you can actually get out of that situation. So I think relationships are a really important part, and family plays an important part. You know, if you come from a family where everyone in your family has had an encounter with law enforcement, it just seems like a normal part of what happens in your life. And, you know, oftentimes they are in situations because of their family. And so it's a very complex picture. It's not easy. It's really easy for us to say. We'd all like to say, well, you made a poor choice. But it's not always that simple.
Well, I was struck in reading through the curriculum how in talking about how society defines us, then you try to shift to, okay, how do you define yourself? And I'm curious, and anybody can jump in on this one, have you had conversations with women who've never really felt like they could define themselves before, who've always been defined by the teacher, by the mother or the father or the boyfriend or the girlfriend or, you know, by society instead? Did you find that with anybody?
I think a big part of our curriculum was the discussion of intersectionality. And I think once the women in our groups had the tools and sort of vocabulary to discuss intersectionality, they in turn kind of were able to reflect using like...
So define that for
me. Okay, intersectionality. It's a series of like identity facets like race, gender, class, education level, religion, all these different things that make up our identities but also build systems of oppression, hierarchies. I think once they were able to identify where they kind of fell within their own communities, within the community of the prison, within their communities at home, they were able to kind of understand like the different path led them to prison and articulate that, which I think is incredibly empowering. If you can teach empower a woman or enable a woman to articulate her experiences in an intersectional way, I think that's part of storytelling. I think that's part of helping her find her truth. I think that is like that to me is like the biggest feminist step you can make. It's a form of political engagement. It's a form of political resistance. It's important. So for me, yeah, the discussion of intersectionality and watching that discussion happen with myself within this circle and watching it happen within my circle really, like, it was mind-blowing to me as a college senior to see, like, all the theory at work, you know, and also to watch these sort of conversations happen between people. It was just incredible. So,
well, we often hear just this is a relationship advice that you see all over the place, probably on Pinterest and, you know, mm-hmm. all over the place, that you have to be comfortable with yourself before you can be in a healthy relationship. But it strikes me that you also have to know yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of that first process?
Well, one of the things that we talk about, too, is this idea of communication. How do you communicate? You know, what are your boundaries? You know, what are hard and fast boundaries for you? What are boundaries that are not so hard and fast? When are those boundaries good boundaries? When are they poor boundaries? Communication is huge.
We're going to talk more about this in just a moment. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. My guests today are Rachel Williams. She's an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa, and three of her students, Katie Hallbaker, Heidi Kukta, and Elise Burnside. And we're talking about a program designed for the Iowa Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville to help women there learn healthy relationships. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a program that is taught in the Iowa Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville to help women there develop good relationship skills. With me this hour is Rachel Williams. She's an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa. She developed this program, although she developed the curriculum along with her students, and she has three of her students here today, Katie Hallbaker, Heidi Kukta, and Elise Burnside. And these students also go into the prison and help facilitate this program. And just before the break, we were talking about helping women define themselves and discover their own identities. And then you also, of course, go on to help them talk about their relationships. And an important part of that is understanding their emotions. So again, a lot of this is about being introspective. And in talking with women about their emotions, what are you hoping to help them learn?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is, so dealing with conflict, for example, you know, everyone's family has their own way of dealing with conflict. You know, you have people that are like, they quietly stomp off and never say anything and give people cold shoulders. You have people that are volcanoes that just erupt and yell at you, you know, and you have people that are able to sort of take a deep breath and deal with things. And so, you know, you're, as a child, you're basically raised to deal with conflict in a particular way. And, you know, not all those ways are necessarily good. And so, you know, one of the tools we talk about, and the, really the point of this curriculum is to give these women a set of tools to work with, you know, things that they can remember. Because, you know, we are with them for about 10 weeks. And the reality is you're not going to be able to transform anyone in 10 weeks, you know. But what we're hoping is that at least they walk away with two or three things that they might use. So, you know, we talk about being passive, passive aggressive, assertive, you know, and how those different styles work and how, you know, you might encounter someone who has a different communication style than you do. So what are ways that you might try to meet them in the middle, you know, somehow? And that, you know, that's pretty important. I think the other thing in terms of women knowing themselves is a number of these women have had really negative experiences. You know, they've had negative experiences in school. They've had negative experiences in the employment area. And so their self-confidence for a number of women is just pretty low. And so they do tend to be rather passive. You know, they have been they've also taken on these very traditional gender norms about being a woman. So, you know, you don't want to take up space. You can't argue back. You have to do whatever someone tells you to do. You always have to be the good girl. And, you know, those are very destructive ideas. So getting to know yourself is really important. And I think figuring out where you came from, you know, because if you've grown up and you've been abused your entire life, you're going to have a really different relationship to touch than someone who hasn't, you know, and being aware that, you know, I may do this when you do this to me. And so I think those are really important things to really confront and be able to get in front of and say, okay, you know, this is what I need and this is what I really want out of a healthy relationship, I think is really important.
Yeah, a lot of the program is designed around journaling, so getting women to write about their stories, write about their experiences and their thoughts. Is there a lot of sharing during the class as well? Do you sit around and do people share their stories about their experiences, Elise?
Yeah, at the beginning of each class, we gave the women an option to share. In every class, there was at least three women that wanted to share. And it was really cool to hear them read from their journals aloud. And it was just really intimate and really honest. And as the weeks went on, more women wanted to share. And then pretty soon we didn't have time for everyone to share. And it was great. They were really great writers, and they seemed to really, really enjoy writing and journaling and reading the poems and stuff that we brought in. Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that the idea of sharing these things that they've written, that's a very vulnerable thing to do.
Yeah.
What did you do as facilitators to create a safe space and make it something that they felt comfortable doing, KT?
Well, part of the our first class was to come up with a list of ground rules for our group that we all decided on. It was very democratic. We wrote them up, so we had them in place for every class session. And we really, you could everyone contributed, so everyone's values were sort of represented in, sort of this workshop setting. And it really, we created like this judgment-free zone that was super important to all of us that anyone could share. And by opening up that kind of doorway, it really enabled everyone to start these conversations and answer honestly and relate to each other. And so this whole kind of these kinship bonds sort of emerged in our group that I think really helped empower, it's such a catch word, but I'm using it, empower the women to share these stories and relate to each other, which I think was hugely important.
Well, and Heidi, I realize that this is, as Rachel was just saying, you're not going to see somebody completely transformed within a 9-week program, but were you able to see changes over the course of the 9 weeks with the way people were thinking and feeling about themselves?
Absolutely. And it went both ways. I mean, I thought totally differently by the end of the first 9 weeks, since I did it twice, like the first 9 weeks in 2012. That was a huge life-changing time for me. But I think one of the most powerful examples I have is, so the curriculum is pretty low tech. So we have a game where basically we pass around a yarn ball and everyone just says whatever is on their mind and then passes it to another person who has to sort of continue on the same sort of tangent. So like if I'm talking about like playing basketball and someone else has a basketball story, then they can raise their hand and be like, oh, I want the ball of yarn next so I can continue talking about basketball. And I was talking about, I started the ball of yarn because everyone was feeling very shy that day. It was one of the first weeks. And I was talking about my relationship with my family and how I wanted to work on being closer to my family. And that was immediately something that resonated with someone else in the group. And it led to this really great conversation about how there's multiple reasons for there to be distance in relationships. And it's not just the distance of incarceration. It can be state lines or broken communication, all those different things. So it was just really great to sort of bond about, hey, we're all struggling. It's not just the people in prison who have crappy relationships and everyone on the outside who has just sparkling, wonderful ones. We're all working on this. So that was really powerful.
I'm curious, KT, you talked about the women, or maybe it was you, Elise, that talked about the kinship that developed in the group, these women getting to be closer with each other because, of course, they've been sharing such intimate things and developing healthy relationships with other women. As you said earlier, Rachel, some of these women have never had other women friends. So do you talk about how to be a good friend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about relationships just very generally, and we talk about communication, I think, was the most important aspect of relationships for them. We talked about ways to solve conflicts without being overly aggressive. And that was really helpful for them. And we did some role playing, conflict resolution and approaching a situation being passive, assertive, and then aggressive, and then analyzing the approach that worked best. And that was most helpful, I think.
One of the things that is really important in this curriculum, and I think it's good for everyone, is to be able to figure out what are you feeling and what are you thinking and what are your needs at that point in time. And so in terms of friendships, understanding that, you have a whole variety of needs and that one person can't meet all of those needs. And so it's really important to figure out, how can I get my needs met by other people and by myself? And what kind of people do I want to surround myself with? And I think, two things that I'm hearing. One is the idea that we come into the prison not only to bear witness to what incarceration looks like in our country, but also to bear witness to each other's stories. You know, so when Heidi talked about the ball of yarn exercise, that's a really powerful moment. And women recognize each other and they say, that happened to you too. And so there's this level of shame that's lifted in a way when you realize that, you know, you're not the only person who had the crap beat out of you when you were 5 years old, or you're not the only person who's been divorced, or you're not the only person who's been in a relationship with another woman and it didn't work out. So I think that's an important thing to think about.
Now, also, I noticed in your curriculum, you have a lot of information and handouts about here are red flags in a relationship. This is how to recognize that this person is trying to exercise control over you, or these are signs that there might be an abusive problem in this relationship. And that's the kind of information that I guess most people would think you would include in this program. It's also something that is available in a lot of different formats. So for the women participating in this program, since so many of them have experienced violence in a relationship or an abusive relationship, even an emotionally abusive relationship before, was this information new to them, or was this a repeat?
It's really funny because I made that same assumption that, oh, they should know this. You know, they probably get domestic violence education shoved down their throats. And actually, that part of the curriculum was included as a direct result of the women who are part of the class saying, we really want to know. How do we know, you know, an abusive relationship? And, you know, it's kind of like fish don't know that they're in water. You know, if you grow up that way and every relationship you've been in is abusive, you may not really be able to recognize that there's another way to live your life. And so in seeking out what those red flags were, we really look for some very specific information about women. And I think what happened in that, those classes, and you all can chime in and tell me if you think this is true, women who were experienced were really preaching in a way to women who were inexperienced. And they said, let me tell you what happened. You know, like, I'll never forget, we were talking about domestic violence. This is a gut-wrenching story that I'm going to tell you. And the women were talking about how to be safe. And, you know, there's no doubt that at sometimes you have to physically make yourself safe. And so one woman said, well, my mother always told me to keep a cast iron skillet hanging on the wall. And the other woman said, well, that's stupid because he could just grab it and whack you with it. She said, I just kept a pot of boiling rice on the stove. I mean, you know, these are terrible things. We don't want to know these things. But it's really interesting when you have a group of women that get together and say, listen, you know, and another woman said, my, you know, husband used to go to work every day and he would take the phone with him in the trunk of his car, you know, and so, you know, and then that another woman says that happened to me, too. And so it's really interesting, you know, in some ways, these are support group moments where women say, you know, this is what I had to do to be safe. It was this bad. Let that never happen to you. You know, recognize that, you know, when he starts looking at your text messages or when he starts checking up on you, this is bad. You need to try to get out, you know, and make a safety plan. And obviously, safety is a big thing. I mean, that was one of the things about this curriculum. The institution said, we want to create a safe institution. And the only way we're going to do that is if the women get along with us and they get along with each other. So that was really important.
I can imagine that hearing those stories must be incredible eye-opening moments for the students who are involved in helping to facilitate this course as well. What did you think, Heidi, when people first started sharing these stories?
Well, as a volunteer with the Rape Victim Advocacy Program, a lot of it was sort of repeat of things I had heard on call with people in crisis. You know, people who are experiencing trauma, they don't think the same way as everyone else. They don't make the same kind of decisions that someone who's not in an unsafe environment would make. So in that way, I was kind of well prepared for some of the things I heard. But I mean, just some of the tips we have to give is like, you know, don't wear scarves so that your partner can't strangle you. And that's just, it's really terrible to think that you could be in a position in society where that's your best option for safety is not wearing a scarf. Wow. Or, you know, not being by the sharp kitchen things when an argument breaks out. You know, you just have to think differently. And a lot of the women who at the prison, I found, they kind of had the mentality of soldiers, you know. And the bravery of soldiers. But just because of the way things were, they ended up in prison, you know.
Can women take this course more than once?
I have had a few women that have wanted to come back and do it again, but I'll have to tell you, we have a waiting list, and so we actually haven't had a lot of room to allow people to do that. I want to return to Heidi's point just for a minute and say I've had a number of people say to me, what can we do? You know, how can we help women not get into this situation? And I would say the number one thing to do is to reduce violence against women, you know, starting from, you know, and really violence against everyone. But violence against women, I find, is one of the major pathways that women walk down that will lead them into prison for a number of reasons. So I think that's really important.
Rachel, when you first designed this program, obviously you're a teacher, and so what your students learn is incredibly important to you in facilitating a course in prison. What those students learn is incredibly important to you. But what were you hoping your outside students would get out of this experience?
I think, I wanted them to realize how theory actually works and where the holes might be. And I also think that my students develop amazing leadership skills. They learn a lot about facilitation. And for many of them, you know, they realize that, and this works both ways, that, you know, life is, people live all kinds of lives. And there's a lot of ways to live your life. And I think in some ways it lifts the veil. You know, they really understand that poverty is a serious issue in the state. Substance abuse is a serious issue. Violence against women is a serious issue. And, you know, all of the women who major in GWIS, actually, and we have a number of men who are in our GWIS department too, and a number of people who are trans, I think all of those students are really at the heart of their practice is the idea of social justice. And I have yet to meet a single student that came out of GWIS who was not just an absolute social justice warrior. I mean, this is one of the reasons I love my students. But I think that working in the prison, they see a lot of social problems that, you know, put a fire in their belly and make them want to go out and change the world.
We have only a minute left, and I'd love to hear from some of the students. I mean, KT, how did this experience change you?
Well, in talking with the women and the other students in the course, I realized how much I had internalized, like, different language that is totally indicative of the problematic power dynamics that are out in our culture. I mean, just for an example, when we were going down the list of, like, markers of an abusive relationship or an unhealthy relationship, it was kind of incredible for me as a women's studies major, you know, who was, like, out marching with posters and, you know, going to all these rallies. Oh, hey, I've totally engaged in these dynamics, too, and I've been okay with it. Mm. So it was interesting for me, kind of a wake-up call for me on some level to be like, oh, I need to check myself, you know, in the situations I'm in, too. So
we all have something to learn. We are out of time, but thank you all so much.
Thank you, Charity, for
here
hosting
today.
Us.
Rachel Williams is an associate professor of gender, women's, and sexuality studies at the University of Iowa. I also spoke with Katie Hawbaker, intern with the University of Iowa Department of Gender, Women's, and Sexuality Studies, and Heidi Kukta and Elise Burnside, also students in the department who've been involved in this program to help women who are in prison learn healthy relationship skills. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio News.